For the third of this week's investigations into the San Francisco traditional jazz revival, I'll be looking into the career of trombonist Turk Murphy, who led his band for the best part of 40 years after leaving Lou Watters' pioneering group.
Rather a complex man, but he had a boyish way about him, and everyone seemed to love him. However, he was a tough taskmaster.
The thing that was important about Turk was that the music obviously meant a lot to him. He was very dedicated to it, and he used to like to use an expression that, you know, it took a lot of guts to play this music.
Turk was a real taskmaster. I mean, he demanded certain things. There was no nonsense at all. I mean, there was a lot of nonsense, but not musically.
Turk was a great teacher. I thought he taught me an awful lot about music and about the importance of part playing, and so larger than life as he was also like a father figure in many respects, and I enjoyed my association with him very much.
His jazz band with Bob Helm on clarinet and the voices of his colleagues, singer Pat Yankee, banjoist John Gill, pianist Pete Clute and cornetist Leon Oakley, remembering the man who personified San Francisco jazz for the four decades up till his death in May 1987. One of the reasons Turk was so strongly identified with San Francisco jazz was that he loved to go on the road as an ambassador for the music he championed. As we heard last night, he spent many years playing in musician-owned clubs in the Bay Area. But more than any other figure in the San Francisco scene, he took his band out to a national and international stage. Singer Pat Yankee was with him.
After I joined Turk in 58, we went to New York with him. He played, you know, all the big clubs. We played the Round Table opposite people like Joe Jones on drums, Tyree Glenn on trombone, Nat Pierce on piano. But they were the intermission group, and Turk's band was, we were the headliners. And once, I'm trying to think of the man that came in from Hawaii. Oh, Martin Denny. And pigeons used to fly over to people eating, you know. And so Turk used to say, my God, we have to follow this pigeon act all the time. But we did have some wonderful times. And then, of course, we went to all the places. We did the Village Vanguard, we did the Embers, we did all these clubs. Traveled around all in the East before they got earthquake magoons. And one of the places we played was the Metropole, which was the old place where Henry Red Allen and Edmund Hall and Claude Hopkins. And I felt very fortunate to meet all these people that you'd pick up a book and you'd read about. They were the instigators of the old jazz and worked with all the old people, you know, of the jazz.
I've heard that the Metropole was a very difficult place to work because the band was almost in a long line.
That's right, yes. Henry Red Allen took Turk and myself up to the Apollo Theater one night. And Turk didn't play, but he played up there. He took him up there, and I went along, but it was just phenomenal. Everybody loved Turk.
Murphy's Band in New York with Cold Cart Blues, featuring Wally Rose on piano and Bob Helm on clarinet. On an earlier tour to New York, Bob's place had been taken by a young Stanford graduate, now a well-respected author and photographer, William Carter.
I toured with Turk's band in 1955 for 6 months, and I remember at an intermission at a table, I was 20 years old, I was learning a lot. I was sitting there, Turk was saying, there were some customers who were saying, Turk, is anyone else doing this? I mean, he was really carefully recreating some of their music from the 20s and 30s. And there was a sort of silence, and Turk didn't think of anyone else who was. And I thought only of England. And I thought, well, I mentioned Humphrey Littleton and some others in England. And Turk said immediately, he said, yes, but they're not doing it on a professional basis the way we are. In other words, I think there's a... All the San Francisco guys have had a very great pride in the fact that they were professional musicians, first, last, and always, and the music came as a product of that, not as a product of revivalists going back to something they didn't know and taking it at second hand and learning it as best they could, as really I did. There's this continuous development in a professional basis here, which marks the music.
That professional basis meant that Turk Murphy's band held its own against all comers on the American jazz scene. It's no surprise to discover that, along with Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington, record producer George Avakian signed Turk's band to the mainstream Columbia label, an honour undreamt of by most traditional jazz bands of the mid-50s. Well, what's more, Turk's band got in on George's idea of what became known as the concept album. They followed the Armstrong All-Stars and Satch Plays W.C. Handy.
I decided to do a series of albums in which we would have a suitable artist do the music of W.C. Handy first, because nobody had ever done an album of W.C. Handy's music, oddly enough. And another one was going to be Jelly Roll Morton, which I did with Turk Murphy and Wally Rose, which is a superb combination.
Mr. Jelly Lord, Turk Murphy's jazz band on September the 14th, 1953, recorded for Columbia in their hometown of San Francisco. To me, what's fascinating about that track is the subtlety of Turk Murphy's arrangement. It's faithful to the spirit of Jelly Roll Morton, but the chord voicings for the front line, especially towards the end, suggest an imaginative and unusual ear for an arrangement. So I was intrigued to discover that Turk Murphy was responsible for some very well-known arrangements indeed, not least the famous Louis Armstrong All-Stars version of Mack the Knife from 1955, as Pat Yankee remembers.
I guess it was earlier than that when Turk went to Germany and met Lottie Lenya. I guess Kurt Wilde had come out with Three Penny Opera, and about he wrote it in about 1928. But Lalia Lenya, I guess, came over here and recorded, and then they took the recording to Germany, and that's it was called Mary Tot, and it was eventually Mack the Knife. And Lalia Lenya's recording was a hit over there. It sold about, oh, I would say, a million records in Europe. And then there was Turk's friend, who I met later, was George Avakian, in 1955, asked Turk to use that same arrangement for Louis Armstrong. And Louis didn't want to do it because he didn't think it would be a hit. So Louis finally recorded, and he went off to Europe, and all of a sudden when Louis came back, it was a big hit, and I guess they had to learn it, and they didn't have the music, so they had to stand around a jukebox and learn the music to go on for a concert that night. But anyway, Turk only made very, they said, do you want the money or do you want the royalties? And Turk said, well, I'll just take the money because I don't, you know, at that time, before Louis hit, he only made $300 for that tune.
Shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them a pearly white, just a jackknife has Mack Heap, dear, and he keeps it out of sight. When the shark bites with his teeth, dear, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, where's Mack Heap, dear? So there's not a trace of red. On the sidewalk, Sunday morning, baby, lies a body oozing light. Someone sneaking around the corner. Is this someone, Mack the Knife, from a tugboat by the river? A cement bag's drooping down. Yes, the cement's just for the weight, dear. Bet you Mack he's back in town.
Turk Murphy's arrangement of Mack the Knife for the Armstrong All-Stars. When Turk's own band came to record the piece, his regular trumpeter at the time was a Midwesterner called Doc Evans. I'd never worked out why Doc didn't play on Turk's famous EP with Mack the Knife, backed by Maryland, My Maryland. So I asked the pianist on that session, Pete Clute, to explain.
He came with the band mainly, I think, to get a look at Turk's arrangements, because he would always get squirreled away with Turk's book and start writing down the trumpet parts and that sort of thing, which of course didn't set too well with Turk. But Doc and Knocky Parker and some of those people in the Midwest were wonderful players, and Doc even went so far as to get me my first tobacco when we went to Toronto one time. I decided that I would like to sort of calm down and maybe smoke a pipe, and he said, okay, I'll pick out the tobacco for you and get you a pipe. So he did, and he got me this tobacco, and I don't know where it was from, but he took it out of the can it was in, and it had little balls on it, and stuffed it into a pipe, and I was green, I guess, for about a whole day, you know, after smoking that thing, after which time I didn't smoke again. I never smoked in my life. But getting back to Doc, he was very familiar with Chicago, and went to Chicago. And he said, Pete, I'll get you a really inexpensive place to stay, and you can just take the L downtown. And I think we were playing at the Blue Note at the time. And he got a place, and, you know, I wasn't pampered, but I did like things clean. And this place was so filthy, I had to put newspapers down on the floor before I could walk on it. It was just awful. Doc and I, we were good friends, and he played well with the band. I remember one story about it. We were in New York. It was a time that we did Mac the Knife. And Marilyn, My Marilyn, and they put Marilyn, My Marilyn, when I say they, at Columbia Records, put it out as a single. And for some reason, Doc wasn't familiar with it, so Billy Butterfield came in and did the horn playing. And I never forget Turk taking that 45 to Doc Evans and said, "This is the way it should be played."
The incomparable Billy Butterfield leading Turk Murphy's jazz band on their New York recording of Maryland from 1955. And in place of the band's regular tuba player, the lighter-than-normal touch of the rhythm section was down to the string bass playing of Milt Hinton. Once Turk settled into a home base in San Francisco, first Easy Street and then, as we heard last night, Earthquake Magoons, the trips to New York got less frequent. But he never lost the travelling bug, and in the 1970s he started venturing overseas on a regular basis, taking with him cornetist Leon Oakley.
It kind of started out when we took our vacations, usually in the mid part of December, and closed the club, that we would often take a couple weeks prior to Christmas, sometimes even covering the time period of Christmas, to go on some extended tours. And the band in 1973 and in 74 did European tours, first one being mostly in Germany, and the second one actually included Germany, Holland, Denmark, and Sweden. The first time we went out, we were in Heidelberg for a concert, and one of Turk's favorite recordings was done there live, and it's called Live in Heidelberg, live with Turk Murphy, and that probably was one of the better things that he ever recorded, because it was live. Unfortunately, I think, like a lot of people who work in the same place all the time, even if you work in a nightclub and up on a stand, it becomes kind of like your office. And I go to an office. I work as an electrical engineer at Bay Area Rapid Transit. I go to an office. I don't consider that the same thing as going out and playing a good jazz job. But I think over the years, after doing that many, many years, running a club, both Pete Clute, who was Turk's partner, as you probably know, both of them spent a lot of extra hours there. I mean, we never showed up till 8:30 at night, but they were often there at 10 o'clock in the morning after playing until 1 or 1:30 in the evening. And all kinds of things have to be done. I found that the pace of the band because of this extra activity, sometimes wasn't as quite as energetic from the standpoint of the leader being looser or maybe establishing tempos that were a little brighter. But when we got out rolling on the road, he really loosened up and the band became very exciting. I mean, extremely exciting at times.
Bear Stomp, Turk Murphy's band in 1973, live in Heidelberg, with this week's guests Bob Helm on clarinet, Pete Clute on piano, and Leon Oakley on cornet. There'll be more about Turk tomorrow night, when I'll also be dipping into the work of another West Coast institution, the Firehouse 5 Plus 2. And to round off the week, I'll be finding out how the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation aims to keep the spirit of this music alive for the next generation. That's at the same time tomorrow night.
Alan Shipton.